You know, I hate killing them that way, but if we get mice in the equipment, we just electrocute them. Just like that. Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program tonight. I have no idea what that noise was. Unless it was our friends from the NSA who we welcome to the program every night, kind of silently. We always know when they're listening. We track back and find, oh, look who's here again tonight. So, hello, everybody. Welcome to the program. It is 7 past the hour. We have a lot of stuff to cover tonight that you may find interesting. Did you hear about the mayor of Los Alamitos in California, small city in Orange County? He sent an email to that got out to a couple of people, one of whom was African-American, and the email depicts the White House lawn planted with watermelons under the title, "No Easter Egg Hunt This Year." A local businesswoman and a volunteer for this city, a woman named Kiana Price, who's black, said Tuesday that she received the email from Mayor Dean Gross's personal account Sunday and wants a public apology. Mayor Dean Gross, G-R-O-S-E, in Los Alamitos, California. She said that she wants an apology. She also said, quote, "I've had plenty of my share of chicken and watermelon and all those kinds of jokes. I honestly don't even understand where he was coming from sending this to me. As a black person receiving something like this from the city freaking mayor, come on." End quote. The Orange County Register newspaper first reported the email on his website last night. Now, the mayor, here we go. Mayor White Boy Gross confirmed to the Associated Press that, oh, yeah, I sent the email to Ms. Price, but, you know, I really didn't mean to offend her. He said he was unaware of the racial stereotype about black folk and watermelons. I don't know anything about that. No, man. Well, what? What are you talking about? He said he and Ms. Price are friends and serve together on a community youth board. Mayor White Boy Gross said, you know, bottom line is we laugh at things, and I didn't see this in the same light that she did. I'm sorry it wasn't sent to offend her personally or anyone from the standpoint of the African-American race. Well, there you go. End quote. African-American race? Does this dumbass white boy not understand what the term African-American means? Well, I didn't want to offend anyone from the standpoint of the African-American race. You know, I know most white people don't even think about this, but I do. I guess it's because of the way I was raised and what I've learned over the course of my life. But when a story like this comes up, you know, I'm ashamed to be white. I just am. I just want to go hide someplace. I don't know. It's just unbelievable. From the standpoint of the African-American race, Mayor White Boy Gross, who just became the mayor a couple of months ago, said he sent an apology email to Ms. Price and her boss and also left her a voicemail apology. Ms. Price said it will be difficult for the two to work together. Ms. Price said, now I'm like, wow, is this really how he feels? Yes, Ms. Price, it is. It's astonishing. Astonishing. Well, I don't see things the way she does. You know, I don't mean to offend anybody, especially not somebody of the African-American race. Oh, my God. Now, you know, it'd be very easy to pick on Orange County and say, well, you know, what do you expect? It's Orange County, California. But, nah, there's really no point to do that. you know, ignorance is probably universal and terminal or curable, but stupidity is not universal, and it is fatal. I mean, this is a stupid white man. That's all, just stupid. And I saw the picture. The person that sent it to me, there's a picture of the White House in the background and a lawn, and instead of Easter eggs, there's watermelons all over. I don't mean to offend anybody, especially not somebody of the African-American race. Oh, my God. Los Alamitos, California, the mayor's office. His name is Gross, G-R-O-S-E. If you want to send an email. Oh, God. I watched a little television today, and this evening, was it on Hardball? I saw Tom DeLay, probably one of the most foul sons of bitches ever to pollute the U.S. House of Representatives. Why? Other than the fact that he's a filthy Republican, is also what he and Jack Abramoff was one of the people involved in this, too. There was an effort by Democrats back when the Republicans were in charge of the White House, in charge of the White House too, but the Congress, effort by the Democrats to get laws passed that said any American corporations that did business in the North Mariana Islands, which is one of our favorite, that's where a lot of corporations go when they want slave labor and don't want to pay any taxes, and this is where they assemble their designer clothing, right? And sneakers and stuff like that. There was a law passed that says the Chinese businessmen who run these companies in the American North Mariana Islands, putting together American products, Chinese businessmen who imported from Southeast Asia what is essentially slave labor. You get the picture? Okay. What the Democrats in Congress were asking for, and I forget who tried to sponsor the legislation, was a law to be passed that said using young girls and young boys in these factories would be illegal. Tom DeLay. Oh, wait, there's more. The young girls and possibly some young boys who were taken there by the Chinese overlords to work in the American companies. The young girls are being raped on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, some of the young girls, now when I say young girls, I mean 13, 14, 15, who were recruited, if that's the right word, in Southeast Asia, be it the Philippines or Thailand or Vietnam or wherever, these young girls who thought they were going to work in the North Mariana Islands in a factory wound up being used as prostitutes on sex tours for American, Chinese, Japanese businessmen. This was the story. So some Democrats in our Congress decided we need a law that prevents this. Tom DeLay said no. And Tom DeLay gave a speech in the North Mariana Islands. There was a big dinner. He and Abramoff and some of their buddies, rich white Republicans, this is what capitalism is to them. They attended a big dinner there, and DeLay got up and gave a speech, and he said to the corporate people who were there and the Chinese businessmen who provided the slave labor and the little girls who were being turned into whores, Tom DeLay stood up and said, "You know, I really like what I see here. This is the future of the American workforce." Now, Tom DeLay is slime. Why would Chris Matthews, why would anybody put this piece of human waste other than Fox News on the air? Why? What is the point? This piece of filth, Tom DeLay, he even looks like a degenerate. He looks like somebody who would travel, say, to, the Dominican Republic with one Viagra tablet left over when he comes home to bugger little children. That's what Tom DeLay looks like. So there he was on Hardball. And Art writes, and in his infinitely nonpartisan wisdom, called the president's speech last night the most irresponsible speech he, Tom DeLay, ever heard on the House floor. Why is Tom DeLay walking around free? Why isn't Tom DeLay in a torture camp someplace? I mean, the Obama administration says they're going to continue to rendition people. We're closing our torture chambers, but that doesn't mean that the torture chambers that exist in the countries to whom we're going to rendition people are closed, because they're not. Why isn't Tom DeLay being tortured somewhere? I'm serious. Why isn't Tom DeLay being tortured? If ever anyone deserved to be tortured, it would be Tom DeLay. Why? Because he wanted to continue the practice of bringing in children for slave labor and forced sex. Now, does that deserve torture? To me, you're goddamn right it does. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh, you sound determined there. In Art's email, he goes on to talk about how today Talking Points memo reported that House Minority Leader John Boehner told reporters today after Obama's hell-raising speech last night, John Boehner, the Republican minority leader in the House, said, quote, "We have a tougher time making our principles relative to the American people because Democrats offer voters a free lunch," end quote. A free lunch. Is that what Barack Obama's? You know, I hate Republicans more every single day, and I never thought that would be possible after what has transpired the past 8 years. But when you have oh, I wish I were only on SiriusXM so I could really say what I mean. But when you have people like Tom DeLay and John Boehner making pronouncements, two scumsuckers, two people who should be driven to the edge of the world and kicked off so the dragons can devour them. When you have people like that in the Republican Party, while it is irritating and does piss one off, you can be sure that the Republican Party is dying and will soon be dead. Now, which is not to say that it won't be zombie-like and rise up and come crashing out of its box the way Dick Cheney did. But anyway, 80% of the American public wants to follow President Obama following last night's speech. Did you see the his ratings went up to 80%? 80% agree with what President Obama said last night. And Boehner thinks so little of us that he says we're looking for a handout. And as Art writes, "Hey, Boehner, when you're not crying before the cameras or working on that fabulous tan, let me ask you something. When was the last time you paid for your own lunch or your own health care or your own travel expenses?" Yeah. Thanks, Art. Well, you know, Boehner and Tom DeLay, and now this freakish Piyush Jindal, the governor of Louisiana. The guy who does exorcisms. Yeah. He does exorcisms. Oh, Jesus Christ. Out! Out, demon! Out! Raus, Middu! Raus! Unbelievable. Oh, God. And John in Indianapolis wrote, I'm sure you saw Tom DeLay on Hardball. DeLay spouted fearly after fearly about the hell that Obama was unleashing on this earth. Of course, the underlying theme in all of this is that the very people who have raped this country are actually defenders of the people by standing up to the evil government. And I'm sure you watched Governor Jindal, who is now trying out for the part of marionette. John goes on, but I guess the real reason I'm writing is because I think I finally realized how these people believe what they spout. They have no interest in being citizens of the United States of America. People like DeLay and Boehner and Jindal, they only have the only interest they have is in self-profit on the back of the country and the population. They don't have a conscience, but they are geniuses at manipulation of the capitalist system. I'm also puzzled, since when is our country defined solely by our economic system? And if we are, and if Americans believe this, then we no longer have a country. The probable silver lining, John writes, of the depression that we're experiencing is that Americans in large numbers are waking up and will not easily fall back under the hypnosis of the Republicans and their boogeymen. Yeah, well, that's the hope. I mean, what the Republicans have done, what they continue to do, and like I say, I hope they continue to have Paiush and Rush Limbaugh and the hoe from Wasilla and Joe the Plumber. What a collection of circus freaks. Stay out there, boys and girl. Stay out there. We love it. Reasonable people. You know, it's been a long 8 years of you know, just negativity and anxiety. We need a circus act like these four. Thank goodness they're around. Are you perfectly comfortable going to war with a moral sanction against the law? Are you perfectly comfortable fighting the world? If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Paul Krugman, New York Times, writes a blog. And today, after the roof-raising, hell-raising speech by Barack Obama last night that just had so many Republicans in the chambers there, you could see them. They're all text messaging each other. I think I'm going to pee my pants. Oh, don't do it here. Well, you know, we've got hookers for after this nonsense is over. You know, you can just imagine what these twits are doing. They're no more interested in governing than they're interested in tipping their latest whore. No offense to sex workers. God, I feel sorry for sex workers that we have to work with Republicans. How do you do it? Oh, never mind. Krugman says, what's the appropriate role of government? Traditionally, the division between conservatives and liberals has been over the role and size of the welfare state. Liberals think that the government should play a large role in sanding off the market economy's rough edges. Conservatives believe that time and chance happen to us all, and that's that. Miserable bastards. He goes on and says, but both sides, I thought, agreed that the government should provide public goods, goods that are non-rival. They benefit everyone, and non-excludable. There's no way to restrict the benefits to people who pay. The classic examples are things like lighthouses, national defense, but there are many others. For example, knowing when a volcano is likely to erupt can save many lives. But there's no private incentive to spend money on monitoring volcanoes, since even people who didn't contribute to maintaining the monitoring system can still benefit from the warning. So that's the sort of activity that should be undertaken by government, right? So what did Paiush Jindal choose to ridicule in his response to Obama last night? Volcano monitoring, of course! and leaving aside the chutzpah of casting the failure of his own party's governance as proof that government can't work, does he really think that the response to natural disasters like Katrina is best undertaken by uncoordinated private action? Hey, why bother with having an army? Let's just rely on self-defense by armed citizens. Krugman concludes by saying the intellectual incoherence is stunning. Basically, the political philosophy of the Republican Party right now seems to consist of snickering at stuff that they think sounds funny. In other words, the party of ideas has become the party of Beavis and Butthead. Well, of course, I go further than that, Mr. Krugman. And then Robert wrote in and said, Mike, my brother sent me this about Piyush Jindal, the 37-year-old one-year governor of Louisiana, saying volcano monitoring is pork barrel spending. Tell that to the hundreds of Americans safely evacuated from Mount St. Helens in 1980 because the federal government predicted the eruption, urged them to leave, and assisted them in many cases. Did you know there is a ski resort in California sitting on top of a volcano? Thousands would be killed if it went off before a warning could be given. When I lived in Anchorage, Alaska 19 years ago, a KLM airliner flew into the ash plume of an Alaskan volcano and all four engines quit. Luckily, the crew got the engines restarted, but everyone would have died if they hadn't. Volcano monitoring put in place under Clinton prevented this from ever happening again. The anti-science bias and short-term thinking of Piyush Jindal is amazing. The amount of money spent keeping Americans safe by instrumenting volcanoes in California, Alaska, and Washington State in a year is a fraction of what the U.S. spends in Iraq every day. Robert. Republicans are dumbasses to start with, and this one happens to be an exorcist. Piyush really does think, too many people have told him, including these hogs in the media, that Piyush Jindal is a rising star in the Republican Party. Well, on the one hand, I hope he is. I really do. On the other hand, that's not. The Republican Party right now is run by white Southern racists like Limbaugh and Joe the Plumber. No, he's not from Toledo. He's probably from some backwoods place in the Deep South. Those are the spokesheads for the Republican Party. The hoe from Wasilla and Piyush and Limburger and you know. So here's what you got: an exorcist, a drug procurer, someone who procures illegal street drugs. That would be Limbaugh. An exorcist. That would be Jindal. An unemployed liar who says he's a plumber, but probably couldn't work a wrench if his life depended on it. And somebody, the hoe from Wasilla, who thinks that slaughtering turkeys is fun. That's the leadership of the Republican Party. And I say, good, hell yeah. Keep Piyush out there. You keep talking, governor. You keep talking. But let me tell you something, dude. If you honestly think, if you really do think that the white people who run the Republican Party, the white racists who run the Republican Party, are going to allow you to be anything other than the governor of Louisiana, you have a rude awakening coming. And it'll probably be a good awakening. And when it finally does occur, when you find out that, they'll use you and abuse you, but eventually they accuse you. And what they accuse you of being, Piyush, is not white. Okay? Now, I realize that the chairman of the Republican National Committee right now is, a black man. But our don't be fooled by that either. Okay? Don't forget the Republican convention. When was it? In 04? Remember that? Where the stage at the Republican convention looks like a night at the BET Awards. Do you remember that? All these black folk up there who were paid an awful lot of money to get up there and sing and dance. Yes, they. And the Republican Party, yeah, look up here. But if you looked out in the audience where the delegates were, let's see, we have 7,000 people here. Hello? Any black people? Black people here?
Here.
Crickets. But my, my, the stage. Wasn't that something? The BET Awards right there at the Republican National Convention. Unbelievable. So, Paiyush, let me tell you something, dude. Go ahead and play in New Orleans. I think the people will throw your ass out once they realize exactly what you're trying to do here by refusing money that would extend unemployment benefits, refusing money that would extend Medicaid benefits, refusing money that would extend school lunches, refusing money that would help children who desperately need health care, all in the name of your sick principles. Huh? Well, we believe in small government. We believe in a free ride, no taxes for the rich, and beat the Christ out of people below the rich. We want them all taxed, but not the rich. Paiyush, I have news for you. Oh, never mind. I just told you what the news was. Whew. Albuquerque, New Mexico. A cold cheese sandwich, fruit and a milk carton. Might not seem like much of a meal, but that's what's on the menu for students in New Mexico's largest school district who don't have any lunch money. Faced with mounting unpaid lunch charges in the economic meltdown, Albuquerque Public Schools last month instituted a, quote, cheese sandwich policy, end quote, serving these alternative meals to children whose parents are supposed to be able to pay for some or all of their regular meals, but fail to pick up the tab. Such policies have become a necessity for schools seeking to keep budgets in the black while ensuring children don't go hungry. School districts, including those in Chula Vista, California, Hillsborough County, Florida, and Lynnwood, Washington, have also taken to serving cheese sandwiches to children with delinquent lunch accounts. Critics argue the cold meals are a form of punishment for children whose parents can't afford to pay. Parents who qualify for three meals are not affected. Nancy Pope, director of the New Mexico Collaborative to End Hunger, said, quote, we've heard stories from moms coming and saying their child was pulled out of the lunch line and given a cheese sandwich. One woman said her daughter never wants to go back to school. End quote. Some Albuquerque parents have tearfully pleaded with school board members to stop singling out their children because they're poor, while others have flooded right-wing talk radio shows thanking the district for imposing a policy that commands parental responsibility. Don't let the little sons of bitches eat. Their parents are unemployed all of a sudden. They're not on the list of the charitable cases. Screw them. Give them nothing. Let them go to the drinking fountain. Sometimes I hate the people who live in this country. What the hell is wrong with you people in Albuquerque? Huh? What is wrong with you? Remember that filthy Christian preacher? What was his name? The fat one who kept saying, people that don't work, I say let them starve! Remember that son of a bitch? Well, guess what? Guess where he might be working?
Where is the outrage? Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So, back to this idea now. And you see, this is what Jindal and the governor of South Carolina, and so many of these southern states, they're saying, no, we don't want the money, whether it is for that would be used for school lunch programs. In this case, of course, Albuquerque, New Mexico is not a southern state, but apparently run by the kind of crazy people on the school board or the governor's office, just like here in the Deep South. But, you know, no money for school lunches. We're out of money. We states are out of money. The parents are losing their jobs. They can't send the kids to school with a buck for a lunch. So we're going to give them a cheese sandwich and a glass of water. And if that's not good enough, to hell with them. And then on right wing radio in Albuquerque, people are thanking the school district for denying children food. Jesus Christ, that's where we are in this country. That's Republicans for you. They're scum. Here's a kid quoted this this article. Second grader Danessa Vigil said she will never eat sliced cheese again. She had to eat cheese sandwiches because her mother couldn't afford to give her lunch money while her application for free lunch was being processed. The seven-year-old child says, every time I eat it, it makes me want to throw up. Her mother, Darlene, said there are days when she can't spare lunch money for her two daughters. The 27-year-old single mother said some parents don't even have the dollar sometimes. If they do, it's for something else, like milk at home. There are some families that just don't have it now, and that's the reason they're not paying. Oh, Christ. I'll bet so many of these good people in Albuquerque would consider themselves Christians. You know, what did Jesus say about this kind of stuff? And that's not all. Jeff in Atlanta just sent this in. This is from the Austin American Statesman down in Texas. The Texas Association of Business, traditionally a Governor Perry ally, came out against expanding unemployment insurance yesterday. The president, Bill Hammond, said that unemployment insurance expansion is like a drug dealer. The dealer gives you your first hit for free to get you hooked, and then you're addicted, and you're paying the consequences for a long, long time, end quote. And Governor Perry invoked a similar metaphor about the stimulus bill in Monday's Wall Street Journal, where he said, quote, if this money expands entitlements, we will not accept it. This is exactly how addicts get hooked on drugs. You know what I'd like to see? Here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the businessman, Bill Hammond, who's the head of the Texas Association of Business. I'd like to see him. And Governor Rick Goodhair Perry, see the two of them, put him in a room, a large room, have one of those long folding tables, and sit them down in chairs on one side of the folding tables. And then bring in, pick a number, 8, 10, 12, 15, big, burly Texas men who are now unemployed because their companies closed down. They're losing their homes because they got screwed on the deal to buy the house, didn't realize it, thought they could handle 14% interest in a balloon note and a resetting mortgage. Their kids are hungry. Their marriages are about to break up. They're desperate. The unemployment comp they've been getting, and you see that's paid by businessmen. That's one of the reasons this business bastard doesn't like it. The unemployment comp's running out. He lost his all 10, 12, 14 of these big, burly, unemployed Texas men lost their health care coverage. They've tried to apply for state health insurance in Texas for their children, but they're told, nah, you don't qualify because you still have assets. Take those 10, 12, 14 men and put them in the same room as Governor Rick Goodhair Perry and the president of the Texas Association of Businesses, Bill Hammond. And then have Rick Perry and Bill Hammond say the same thing to these men. You know what? Expanding unemployment insurance for you, bubbas, would be like, you know, it's like you're hooked on drugs. We can't do that. No, we're not going to accept this money from that boy's stimulus plan up there in Washington, D.C. We're not going to accept it, huh? Because, you know, we don't want you big, burly Texas men to get hooked. And then listen to the screams as Rick Perry and Bill Hammond find out what it's like to be pulled into a million pieces by 15 big old burly Texas men who have just about lost everything, including their families. And these two arrogant, elitist sons of bitches sit there and tell them that expanding unemployment benefits is like giving drugs to Rush Limbaugh. And watch what happens. And then when it's all over, they can send in some still employed cleaning people. One of those places, you've seen them on television, no matter what happens in your house, a fire, a flood, a hog butchering, bring us over and we'll clean it up. When we're done, you won't smell anything, you won't see anything, all the stains will be gone, all the teeth, hair, and eyeballs cleaned up nicely, no bone fragments, everything taken care of. The insults, you know, the insults that poor people always take, or certain classes of people in this country, classes as defined by the ruling class, the insults, the boot on the face. What is it? Orwell said, if you want to see the future. Well, actually, it was O'Brien who said it to Winston Smith. If you want to see the future, picture a person, a man lying on the ground with a boot in his face. That's the future. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. But Governor Rick Goodhair Perry, wouldn't that be something? They could send his remains to his family in an envelope after a meeting like that, couldn't they? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. I think it's time for a missive from Prairie 2, our economic correspondent here on the Malloy program, on Second Thought Network. You know, I'm still getting emails about people who are very, very confused about, you know, what happened. And you know, maybe someday it'll all come out. But like I said, and I'll say it again, about 95% of what has been out there in the blogosphere is not true. It's just that simple. All right, from Prairie 2. Subject line, knockout in one round, call the meat wagon. Prairie 2 writes, we've got a big match tonight, folks, and the fighters are entering the ring. Coming in from the left, it's the undisputed champion of the people and leader of the free world, Barack Hussein Obama. And taking the far right corner, it's the new kid, Bobby the Spindle Jindal. The champ is looking confident, having come off a stunning victory over the triple tag team of Insane McCain, the hoe from Wasilla, and Joe the Plumber. The challenger from Team Republican needs to score some points early, but without a ballot box to stuff, it will be an uphill fight in this arena. Still, his team has run up more dollars in debt than there are stars in the sky, so they maintain that they are the captains of the universe and will not go quietly. The champ is coming out hard with an agenda for prosperity, and Spindle counters with weak government should get out of the way. Obama comes again with a hard left. No tax increases on the middle class. Jindal is stumbling around the ring, mumbling, tax cuts for the rich, tax cuts for the rich, for the rich, for the rich. The champ takes his time and tries to get the crowd to rise to salute the serviceman in the audience. The fans on the right don't realize this means them and continue sucking their lemons. Republican cheerleaders run up and down the aisle with cattle prods, attempting to get them up without any success. The challenger attempts to come back with a complete rewrite of history, but the champ will have none of it and comes out swinging for the truth. It's a jab left, another left, and it's all over. The people's referee isn't even counting. He's calling for the stretcher. Truth, justice, and freedom have won the day. From Prairie 2. Well, I've got several people who write to this program who should be writing for publication all over the blogosphere. And probably will, eventually. Patrick Leahy calls for a truth commission. That's right. Leahy is calling for a truth commission to investigate the Bush crime family's authorization of torture. And his Judiciary Committee will hold hearings on this next Wednesday. Just on torture. Okay, that's a start. This is what Leahy said on the Senate floor this morning.
The citizens of this country have said we should have change, and we should. But we also know the past can be prologue for the future unless we set things right. My proposal for a commission but address the rest of the picture, which is understand how these types of policies were formed and exercised. I do this to make sure the mistakes are not repeated. The determination to look beyond the veil that so carefully concealed the decision-making in these areas is growing. And next Wednesday, the Senate Judiciary Committee will hold a hearing to explore these ideas and to continue the conversation about what we can do moving forward.
Next Wednesday, huh? Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, also on the Senate floor, spoke after Leahy, and Whitehouse explained why an investigation into the Bush administration war crimes is so necessary.
We have to learn the lessons from this past carnival of folly, greed, lies, and wrongdoing, so that the damage can, under democratic processes, be pointed out and corrected. If we blind ourselves to this history, we deny ourselves its lessons. Lessons that came at too painful a cost to ignore. Those lessons merit disclosure and discussion. Indeed, disclosure and discussion make the difference. Between this history being a valuable lesson for the bright and upward forces of our democracy, or a blueprint for those darker forces to return and someday do it all over again. We also have to brace ourselves for the realistic possibility that as some of this conduct is exposed, we and the world will find it shameful, revolting. We may have to face the prospect of looking with horror at our own country's deeds.
Well, that's only if you're not a Republican, Senator. Republicans are murderous sons of bitches who don't care about anything. Republican rank and file out here will say, yeah, but George Bush had to do that. He kept us safe for 7 years. You know how many plots against America were thwarted because they tortured people and got all this valuable information? Senator Whitehouse then continued his call for a truth commission.
We are optimists, we Americans. We are proud of our country. Contrition comes hard to us. But the path back from the dark side may lead us down some unfamiliar valleys of remorse and repugnance before we can return to the light. We may have to face our fellow Americans saying to us, no.
Apparently, we have a double track there. We'll clean it up and play it for you a little bit later. Can you do it now? That must have been recorded. Did you record that on top of Sheldon Whitehouse's statement?
And we will have to explain somehow. This is no small thing, and not easy. This will not be comfortable or proud, but somehow it must be done. Chairman Leahy has embarked on the process of considering a new commission, one appropriate to the task of investigating the damage the Bush administration did to America,
Whoa.
To her finest traditions and institutions,
Whoa.
To her reputation and integrity.
Yikes!
The hearing he's called in coming days will more thoroughly examine this question to help us determine how best to move forward. I stand with him. Before we can repair the harm of the last 8 years, we must learn
the truth. Well, you know, I certainly agree with Leahy and Sheldon Whitehouse. It's about damn time. Now, what do you suppose is going to happen next Wednesday? Boy, I know I'll be glued to my television, or probably to my computer, because if I understand how corporate America works and its stranglehold on media, with a couple of exceptions, none of this will be shown on commercial television. I hope I'm wrong. But I doubt if CNN or MSNBC, the two real cable network cable channels that are on 24/7 during the day, will show any of this. C-SPAN, excuse me, C-SPAN 1 and C-SPAN 2 probably won't either. They will be doing repeat songs and dances out of this Senate hearing or that House hearing. So the only thing left might be for people who have access to it, C-SPAN 3. Which is on a very, very limited number of cable systems or satellite systems. So you may have to go to, I'm sure CNN will carry it online because, you know, carrying this online, CNN believes still, is somehow safer for them than putting it on the air.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Tom in Joshua Tree, California, sent me an email about something Mark Twain wrote during the Spanish-American War and the subsequent revolution in the Philippines. I've talked about this frequently. If you have only read Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer or Innocents Abroad or, you know, his humorous fiction, you're really missing the essence of Mark Twain. Try The Damned Human Race. Try Letters to the Earth, and you'll find what Twain was all about, really all about. But Joshua, I'm sorry, Tom writes, Mike, here's a paragraph written by Mark Twain regarding the habits of the American military in the Philippines, published in 1902. He describes our use of waterboarding. It's part of Twain's anti-imperialist satire. When the Japanese imitated these tactics on American prisoners, they were hanged as war criminals. When Americans do it, we are called heroes, given medals of freedom, and promoted to the noblest offices in the land. Do they teach Mark Twain at West Point or at the War College? Or is it simply a Christian tradition, patented and bequeathed to us from Torquemada? Do we hang imitators for torture or for patent infringement? Did Obama, who endorses rendition to torture states, mean we don't torture because from now on we're simply outsourcing our methods to licensees? Sometimes the insanity of contradictions, ignorance, and blatant lies become too much. Please clarify. I can't. Here's what Mark Twain wrote in a piece called A Defense of General Funston. There are weak-headed and weak-principled officers in all armies, and these are always ready to imitate successful, notoriety-breeding methods, let them be good or bad. The fact that General Funston has achieved that notoriety by paralyzing the universe with a fresh and hideous idea is sufficient for this kind. They will call that hand if they can and go it one better when the chance offers. General Funston's example has bred many imitators and many ghastly additions to our history. The torturing of Filipinos by the awful water cure, for instance, to make them confess what? Truth or lies? How can one know which it is they are telling? For under unendurable pain, a man confesses anything that is required of him, true or false, and this evidence is worthless. End quote. Now, for those of you who have read Twain, beyond Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer, which were both great books, oh my God, defining American literature, you understand his satire here. He is not defending this General Funston at all. He's talking about the cheap imitators who also waterboard. And if you know the history of when we went after the Philippines to claim as our own, this is, you know, Teddy Roosevelt. This is when America became an imperialist empire-seeking nation at the turn of the 18th century to the 19th. And the media back at that time was more than willing to go along with this. Spanish-American War, Cuba, the Philippines, the Hispaniola. We wanted those areas. This is the same time that the general I'm quoting all the time, the two-time Medal of Honor, Smedley Butler, he wrote about this time too. We were also invading and destroying with our Marine Corps, Central America, because we wanted the resources there. But we got involved in the civil war then that erupted in the Philippines after the Spanish were defeated. And there were two factions in the Philippines seeking their freedom. One was willing to become whores for the United States and Teddy Roosevelt and U.S. imperialism. The other faction was not willing to become whores to U.S. imperialism. As a matter of fact, the other faction actually wanted independence. Now, those are the ones we butchered. And I mean butchered. We murdered them like there was no tomorrow. We had a me lie in the Philippines in the Spanish-American War every day until we finally defeated the ones who really wanted their freedom and installed the ones who lasted clear up until Marcos was driven out in the, when was it? When was Marcos driven out? The 70s? 80s? I guess it was the 80s. Yeah, the 80s. And I've mentioned this before, but one of the ways we defeated the ones who really wanted freedom, we had a new weapon that was invented over here. It's called a Gatling gun. And the amazing thing about it, you'd turn the crank and the sumbitch would fire like 150 rounds a minute or 200 rounds a minute, whatever it was. It was murderous, man. It would just cut people down like there was no tomorrow. So whole villages would be rounded up in the Philippines, the ones that were supporting the ones who really wanted freedom, the real freedom fighters. Whole villages would be rounded up, taken up to, say, the convex or is it concave hole on the top of a now quiet volcano. The entire village would be put down into that hole, and then the United States Marine Corps would line up around the rim with their new weapon, the Gatling gun. And on the command, they would open fire. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just changing the game. Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
From the great beyond. They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
25 before the hour here.
So you can stick your little pins in that voodoo doll.
Cohen is out on tour. How old is he? He's in his late 70s, isn't he?
He's older than McCain.
That's right. Well, oh, my God. We have the big article in today's New York Times in the arts section, arts and entertainment section, about Leonard Cohen's tour. He looks good. He's spent the past 4 or 5 years in a Zen monastery in California.
I think that may be because he was broke.
Well, yeah, but he just won a huge lawsuit. While he was there, no, he wasn't. He wasn't broke when he went out there. He was broke when he came out. His manager stole millions from him. But I think he got the settlement, $8 or $9 million back. Great singer, songwriter, one of the real greats. Oh my God. Pelosi and what's his name? Leahy and White House. I don't know what to make of this. Steve in Dallas writes, Mike, did you hear that Speaker Pelosi's Speaker Pelosi said on Rachel's show tonight that while she's in favor of the Truth Commission, she also did not want to see these guys given immunity in return for their testimony. She seems to think that many of them could be prosecuted, especially the Bush Justice Department gang. I found this to be a little bit encouraging, Steve in Dallas. Well, you know what, Steve? I find it to be a little bit hypocritical and sneaky and cowardly on the part of Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi had a chance to nail these sons of bitches big time. It's called impeachment. So I don't know what to make of this. Maybe people a lot brighter than I can say, well, Malloy, that was an impossibility. They had to wait until... these thugs are out of office and then charge him with crimes, criminal court, yada, yada. Okay, maybe so. But I still have a hard time with Nancy Pelosi's declaration 2 years ago or whenever the hell it was. It seems like a lifetime ago when the Democrats took over that impeachment was off the table. Oh, well, Glenn Greenwald writing at Salon.com. Reiterates the Judiciary Committee appears to be on the verge of creating a truth commission to investigate Bush crimes. And Greenwald has some of the dialogue on Rachel's program tonight. Rachel Maddow said, this is something that liberals have really been pushing, and you have stated your support for John Conyers convening an investigation into potential lawbreaking in the Bush administration. Pelosi, absolutely. Maddow, you've been outspoken about contempt of Congress charges related to the making political of the Justice Department and that investigation. You have been less specific about how Congress should proceed on warrantless wiretapping and torture. Why is that? Pelosi. Senator Leahy has a proposal, a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is a good idea. What I have some concern about, though, is it has immunity. And I think that some of the issues involved here, like the services part, politicizing of the Justice Department and the rest, they have criminal ramifications, and I don't think we should be giving them immunity. And Pelosi then acknowledged that the revamped FISA bill that passed Congress in 2008 was flawed in many important respects, but said that, quote, the part of the bill that was positive, end quote, was the requirement that the Justice Department's Inspector General investigate the National Security Agency eavesdropping program and issue a report. Oh, not another one of those. Now, that report's due this summer as to the scope and legality of Bush's eavesdropping. About that comment, Maddow asked Pelosi whether she would favor criminal prosecution if, as many people expect, the Inspector General's report concludes that the warrantless eavesdropping was illegal. Maddow. Then in terms of your report, if the Inspector General report that comes out this summer suggests that there has been criminal activity at the official level on issues like torture or wireless wiretapping or rendition or any of these other issues, Pelosi, no one is above the law. I think I've said that. Maddow, you support a call for a criminal investigation, potential investigation? Pelosi, absolutely. Okay, that's, as Glenn Greenwald writes, that's pretty definitive. Well, there's more. You can go to Salon.com and read what Glenn Greenwald has up there. So next Wednesday, Leahy will be holding hearings. It's at thinkprogress.org also. A recent poll found that a large majority, more than 60% of Americans, favor investigations into Bush wrongdoings, including warrantless wiretapping and torture. And I think, I don't know. What do you think is going to happen? Jack Reed, who is a senator from Rhode Island, Democrat, added his name this afternoon on MSNBC to the growing list of congressmen who are endorsing either congressional or Justice Department investigations into the Bush administration. Jack Reed, senator, said, quote, I think we have to seriously investigate allegations of torture. I think our political system as well as our judicial system is strong enough to conduct these investigations fairly and then to bring those people to justice. I don't think we should be afraid of that. I don't either. You know, that might be the thing that would cause the pig man to have a massive coronary inside his you know his studio stinks. You know he does. You know it does. Wouldn't that be something if Limbaugh just went crazy? If hearings were conducted, which he would absolutely go nuts. And at that point, the Christian God could reach down, shove his long arm down Rush's throat, grab his ass, turn him inside out, throw him up against the wall where he would stick, and that would be the end of Rush Limbaugh. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Was that a little too graphic? What?
Just normal images of Rush make me want to hurl. So the inside-out blubber Rush is just a little more than I can handle with this stomach virus that Molly brought home.
You know, this I find this this to be, I want to say, this is so cool. And I guess that wouldn't be the right thing to say because that sounds very... I don't know. It doesn't sound right. But a month into the Obama presidency, Michelle Obama is viewed more positively than were other first ladies in the past 28 years at similar stages. That's according to the latest New York Times CBS News poll. Overall, 49% of Americans have a favorable opinion of Mrs. Obama. 5% view her unfavorably, and 44% do not yet have an opinion. Jesus Christ. in a February 1993 New York Times CBS poll, 44% expressed a favorable view of the first lady at the time, Hillary Rodham Clinton, while 16% viewed her unfavorably. And early into Reagan's first term, 28% rated Nancy Reagan positively. Polls conducted just before their husbands assumed office also showed 3 in 10, 30%, offering a favorable opinion of Laura Bush, and 33% expressing a positive view of Barbara Bush. And Mrs. Obama has 49% favorable. Now, remember, during the campaign last year, when the pig man, the filthy, lard-ass, drug-dealing Rush Limbaugh and his demons from hell in talk radio tried to paint her as unpatriotic and carrying racial anger. Remember that? Remember those dirty, filthy, slimy bastards? Remember that? Prompting questions about whether she might be a political liability for her husband.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, anybody that comes out and says, well, you know, for the first time, I'm proud to be an American. What is that? What's up with that? Anybody got Oxycontin? God damn, I can't get my housekeeper to go get me anymore. Jesus, that's why I'm getting so obese.
Her negative rating is now down from about 20% during the campaign down to 5%. Way to go, Limbaugh, you pig, filthy hog, you. You certainly, you and your minions certainly can't influence public opinion, can't you, huh? What's the matter, Rush? Lost the spark? Hello? Oh, what the hell, you can't hear me. You're deaf. And you're deaf because of your drug abuse, getting street drugs, making your housekeeper go score your street drugs. And who got that Viagra for you, Rush? You know, when you came back from the Dominican Republic, you had one left, and the feds wanted to know where your script was, and you gave some half-ass Rush Limbaugh answer, and you got off again, didn't you? Three strikes and you're out, fat man. Okay, it's not Leonard Cohen. Don't you love her? 10 before the hour. All right, let's do some phone calls here in the last segment of this hour. Starting with, how about Kevin, who is calling from Brooklyn, New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Kevin. Hello. Welcome to the program. Kevin?
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just want to say that I almost feel sorry for Bob Jindal.
Why?
You ever seen Blazing Saddles?
Yeah.
You know, it's like when the town got into a jam and no white guy was crazy or dumb enough to...
Right.
They need to take on, like, get a desperate darkie, for lack of a better
right.
time, do this job.
Right, right.
It's the same thing. I bet you, and I'm willing to bet you any amount of money, they went to Michael Steele first. I am willing to bet my right arm they went to Michael Steele. But one thing, Michael Steele's a lot of things, yeah. But he ain't stupid.
You don't think Michael Steele is stupid?
He's not.
I think he's a clown.
But they're paying him well to look like a clown.
Oh, okay. All right. That's all right. I mean, sure. But he's still a clown. I mean, you know, you can put as much lipstick on a pig as you want to. And what do you still have?
A pig. Black Republicans is like the biggest con there is.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. See, I mean, it's insane. You know, if Michael Steele is in it for the money, You know, good for him. Good for him. That's about the only way, the only thing Republicans understand. So if Michael Steele is doing it for the money, let him have at it. But if Michael Steele thinks that anybody, what, Jeff Sessions down there in Alabama is going to take Michael Steele seriously, please.
None of them will.
No. They,
because how many black elected Republicans are there now?
How many?
None.
You mean in the Senate? Not, there's not a black senator in the U.S. Senate. In the House, oh, yeah, there's a black caucus. There's, I don't know, 30 or 40 members of the House.
Yeah, but they're all Democrat. I don't think there's one black Republican in Congress.
Oh, no. Okay, I got you. No, not one. Not a single one. Not even.
Even on the state and local level, there's not a black political entity that's Republican out there.
Well, I
so they got the next best thing.
Say what?
The next best thing.
What is?
Bob Jindal.
Oh, Bob Paiush. He's crazy. I mean, this is a guy who does exorcisms. Give me a break. I mean, that may work in New Orleans. I remember one time I took my kids and went to New Orleans, and one of the first places my son Chris, who was about 9 years old at the time, the first place he wanted to go was to one of those root ladies who had a, you know what a root lady is?
Oh, yeah, a voodoo lady.
Okay, that's right.
I'm Jamaican, so I know. That,
oh, okay, all right. We had to go to one of those little voodoo shops down in the quarter, and yes. Chris walked in there, and I mean, there were some scary-looking people in there, but he wanted a potion. He was 9 years old. He was in the fourth grade at the time, fourth or fifth grade, and he wanted a potion that he could put on his wrist or on his forehead that would attract this little girl who was in his class that he really loved. So we walked into that place, and I mean, whoa, Lord have mercy. I've never seen so many, I don't know, alligator feet and snake eyeballs and little things in jars of formaldehyde that scared the hell out of me just looking at them. So that, I mean, it works in New Orleans. That's cool. But Bobby Jindal or Paiush, he does exorcisms. So, okay, all right.
Well, you know how he got the name Bobby.
No, I don't.
Supposedly, when he, growing up, he felt so out of it, and
yeah.
The Brady Bunch was a show that he could relate to, so he took on the name Bobby after Bobby Brady.
You know,
for real.
It's not even close.
Huh?
He's not even close to Bobby Brady.
No kidding. Ray Charles could see that.
Oh, my God. Bobby Brady. All right, listen, Kevin, thanks, man. I appreciate it. This is the first time
you've... No problem, bro.
Have you called here before? Kevin? Never mind. All right.
Hello, my name is Bugby. How may I give you excellent customer service today? I hear you are having problem with hard drive.
Kathy,
I'm so very sorry that is happening to you, ma'am.
You're getting a bit racist in your middle years here, aren't you?
I just wonder if you were nominated for the Father of the Year Award for walking your 9-year-old son into the voodoo house. I mean, good Lord, if you even thought about taking Molly, if Molly's, Daddy, I really like this boy, okay, let's get some roots. Better not happen.
Hey, Chris turned out all right. I think that was the same trip we had at first taste of
probably
it.
Probably still has some of that stuff. Now I understand how he got Katie.
That's right. He probably still has some of the dregs of the first, I think that was the first time he ever smelled, and I didn't know it at the time, but tasted a hurricane.
Just keeps getting better, Mike. You know, you're making your case here.
And we were walking down, Canal, not Canal Street. We were walking down, I'm drawing a blank here, one of the streets where the doors were wide open. The strippers were in there. And it's great fun to watch a 9-year-old boy who's out with his dad and his sisters walking by an open door where strippers trying to pretend like he's not looking. That was funny. That was the only time I've ever been around Chris when I thought he was going to break his neck.
So he was drunk, buying roots, and looking at strippers when he was 9.
I almost lost custody of him.
You don't get to take Molly on trips by yourself.
No, I wouldn't think of taking Molly someplace by myself. But Chris is my man. Chris is my man. And Chris turned out right. What is he, 6'2", about 190 pounds? All
the roots.
All muscle. Something down there worked. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is On Second Thought Radio Network. Welcome back. It is just about 7 past the hour. The Malloy Program on Second Thought Radio Network. A couple of quick emails. Then we're going to go to your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. So if you have a POV you would like to express, join us, okay? Kathy in Green Bay, regarding Pelosi's reluctance to impeach, but now talking about possibility of criminal action against these bastards. Kathy writes, the best interpretation is that the House didn't impeach the Bushes because if they had, Bush would have pardoned all his cronies and the Justice Department would have lost their shot at them. Of course, if the Department of Justice doesn't do anything, that was a high-priced failed gamble. Gee, wasn't it grand, Kathy writes, when someone broke the law, they just got prosecuted? Wasn't that a pretty straightforward system? Oh, yeah, but now if Republicans break the law and the Democrats seek redress under the Constitution, the pissy Republicans, it's politics. Well, see, but let Bill Clinton get caught with his zipper stuck. And, oh, my God, the Republic comes to a dead standstill while the Republicans have their fun. That was part of the plan to make the Republicans a permanent majority. Hey, Republicans, how's that working out for you, huh? You dumb bastards. John in Los Angeles writes, is it possible that Pelosi did not want to be president? If she had successfully impeached Chucklenuts and Cheney, and they had been ultimately removed, found guilty, she would have become president as third in line. Or maybe she did not want it to look like she was trying to be president through default. But now there is no excuse for her not to work toward their prosecution. If she doesn't do so now, she needs to be replaced with someone who will. John in Los Angeles. All right, to your phone calls. Who do we have here? I think Douglas in Sacramento, listening on Sirius. Hey, Douglas, welcome to the program.
Mike, it's good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Before I forget, you were talking about Mark Twain a little while ago.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the American Anti-Imperialist League?
Yeah, he was part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I just read their manifesto recently. I was wondering if you had.
I don't know that I ever read their manifesto. If I did, it was like 30 or 40 years ago when I started to realize the full scope of what Mark Twain was all about in the last 20 years of his life and what he wrote about and how fiery he was about his atheism and his anti-imperialist stance against the government of the United States. So I may have read it, but probably not.
Yeah, it's worth looking at. I found it in a thrift store in a little history book I got for 69 cents, but I'm sure it's online someplace.
I'll be darned.
But anyway, I'd taken some time off from speaking to you. I've always been listening, but I was just getting too dark. And I needed to do some anger management.
Sure.
But not tonight. I just I took a break, but the I just thought to myself, well, you were gone on vacation last year. Compared to you, Mike Malloy is an optimist. And it just stopped me dead.
So you decided that you were too far into the dark side.
Oh, yes. I was just too nasty and too suspicious and too just, you know.
Well, what got you out of it, Douglas?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing better. That's why I'm back.
But tonight
I'm all pissed off at the homeless situation here.
Right. But what got you out of your rage and anger?
Nothing in my environment. I just made a decision.
Oh, okay. All right.
I decided I couldn't live my life thinking of myself as a pessimist compared to you. I couldn't make a life out of that.
No, I would think that would probably be pretty difficult.
But anyway, tonight we had a little show on the homeless here in our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And that got me fired up again. So I took a night off from my non-angry stance.
Yeah.
There's a guy here. He's working for the banks, cleaning out foreclosed homes.
Uh-huh.
He used to have 3 people working for him. Now he's got 73.
Oh, my God.
And he has a quota. He has to do between 15 and 17 houses a day.
Uh-huh.
And he tries to be a good citizen and get charities in, like to salvage stuff.
Right.
But there's just no way they can keep up with him.
Now, you're talking about the stuff that's left behind, like furniture and appliances and,
computers.
Right.
Family mementos. He found an urn, funerary urn with ashes, complete. They did let him save that.
Oh, my God.
And the unemployment situation is just... they expect it'll be officially in the double digits by this year.
No, you're talking about...
We know it's really over that now, but...
You're talking about nationwide or in Sacramento or in California?
In this area they're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
In particular. I guess for we were, I guess, a regular little Republican pest hole. We really got hit hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on disability, and I'm contributing partially to the support of between 6 and 10 people.
Good Lord.
Just, you know, helping out little bits here and there when I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I just get, I mean, when I see people, good people, you know, want to work hard and they are living worse than me,
mm-hmm.
I just get really, really angry.
Sort of the way you felt that you were getting darker than Mike Malloy.
Well... It doesn't feel the same. I get, I think that I have reason to hope now, so I can stand more anger.
Yeah, that's interesting.
We did turn a corner, so at least I've got that in front of me. You know,
yeah, right.
I can keep that in mind.
Right.
So that's how things are here. It was on Oprah, as a matter of fact. She did a whole show on it.
Is that right? All right. Well, Douglas, thanks a lot for checking in. I'm not surprised. Thanks, Douglas. We'll talk again. I'm not surprised that one of the growth businesses is cleaning out bank foreclosed homes. You know, I don't think I grew up at a time when the memory of what the banks did in the 20s. And the way the banking chieftains were hauled before the Senate and the House back in the 30s, that was before my time, way before my time. But I've heard stories from my mother and my grandparents. My grandfather used to rail against Standard Oil of New Jersey, which I believe was the behemoth. And it was broken up. And by law, and of course now it's back together again, ExxonMobil is nothing more than the old Standard Oil Empire. But I can remember seeing pictures in old newspapers that my grandparents had of these banking executives called before Congress and pretty much given Congress the middle finger way back 80 years ago. And here they are doing it again. I mean, these rat bastards really don't care. Every time you turn around, you hear of more, you know, just grand old parties on the public's dime. These sons of bitches don't get it, do they? That's why I say treat them the way the Chinese treat their corporate thieves. The one, you know, every once in a while, for the most part, the Chinese, I guess, is too big, is too unwieldy for them to keep track of everybody. But when they do find people like this, they take them out and shoot them. And then immediately harvest their organs and sell them to somebody from the UK or the United States. You know, a liver, a kidney, here's a heart. Would you like some corneas? Here, these are fresh. Because these pig bastards in this country just utterly and absolutely refuse to pay attention. They get $6 or $7 billion and they go spend $10 million on a party. What did Sheryl Crow get for this party? $100,000? And these rotten sons of bitches just continue to do it. Nothing focuses the mind like having a few of your compadres shot at dawn. You know what I'm saying? Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
More Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Just as an aside, we may get to this tomorrow, but anybody know what the necessity is, as Barack Obama is now saying, that we maintain 50,000 troops in Iraq? Well, what's up with that? We don't have that many people in Korea, South Korea, and we're still at war with the North Koreans. 50,000? Again, I'm counting on Barack Obama working rope-a-dope against these fools, whether the fools are in the military or in the business community or the Republican Party. Just go ahead, Mr. President. Just please make sure that it is rope-a-dope. Jules in Miami writes in, "Hey, Mike. Great show as always. Up worrying tonight. My old man going in for open heart surgery tomorrow. He's had about 3 or 4 heart attacks so far. He knows he's all effed up, but we can't afford the GD medication. We've tried to apply for help to get it, but of course end up getting the round around and nothing ever gets done for him. It pisses me off how that moron Jindal can get up there and talk blank about government helping or not helping regular hardworking people. MFers like him can afford to spew their garbage as they live off the government breast, which includes a great pension and second to none effing health care. Ah, BS. P.S. Did you mention something about that fat blanker Hagee? Please tell me that blanker is going to end up being some good Christian's blank in the big house. In his case, the big, big house. MF-er. Keep up the great work, guys. Jules in Miami, also known as the Sixth Circle of Hell." You know, every time I get his email, Kathy, it's a real challenge to try to read any of it over the air. Jules, I hope your dad is okay tomorrow, all right? Really, hope he's okay. Hagee was Pastor Hagee. That was one we were trying to think about earlier this evening, who said that people who don't work for a living and earn their food should starve to death. This from a guy who is supposed to be a Christian minister. This lard-ass, another Limbaugh type. God only knows how many little boys Hagee is buggering. But, you know, he runs something called Christians for Jews or something. He always running around the Middle East like, you know, and the Jews see him coming, the Israelis see him come and say, "Oh, God, here comes the fat Christian again. All right, let him go to the Wailing Wall. Let him try to daven a little bit. He'll never do it. If he bangs his head on the wall, maybe he'll knock himself out and we get him out of here." But, you know, Hagee is just another one of these swine, just unbelievable swine. And they went after Barack Obama's preacher. What was his name? How soon we forget. Well, that was just a flash in the pan. But Pastor Hagee, this huge, obese, grunting pig who constantly just crushes the body of Jesus, just stomps on it, just treats it like a doormat.
Yeah, all the poor people just starve!
And he screamed it. Remember that? We played you that audio about a year ago.
I hope they starve!
You know what's going to happen, Mr. Hagee, when you die and go to your heaven? Yeah, there's going to be a whole band of angels waiting for you at the pearly gates, and they're going to carry you down to hell, open the door, and kick you in. And when you get there, you're going to be eaten alive for all eternity by snakes, scorpions, and spiders. How about that? God hate these people. Back to your phone calls. We got an open line here. The number is 800-989-1480. Where are we? Flo. Flo is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Flo, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Flo.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, it's about time.
You betcha. I'm a brash old broad with a set of brass ones. And I'd like to share my loathing. By the way, I love your rage. My loathing of the right-wing religious hypocrites. With my favorite quote from Tom Jefferson.
And that is?
The day will come when the mystical generation of Jesus, in the womb of a virgin, by a supreme being as his father, will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter.
Yeah, but Thomas Jefferson was a Christian.
Not hardly.
Oh, this is a Christian nation.
Not hardly.
Okay.
I thought you'd love that.
Yeah, that's a good one. The framers were deists. They certainly did believe in some sort of a supreme being. Of course, it was all post-Enlightenment, but it didn't matter. Some of them still believed in spooks flying around, doing things. But the framers of the U.S. Constitution were decidedly not Christians. Don't forget when when the pirates kept attacking U.S. merchant ships off the shores of Tripoli, they were put on trial or there was a court case or whatever. And was it Jefferson or Adams or somebody said the United States is definitely not a Christian nation? Hey, Flo, got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Call again. Call again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Come on, let's get up and dance well. Come on, get up and dance. Here we go. Woo! Come on, move around. Yeah. Let's go. Doesn't that feel good? Come on. Now, see, isn't that better? Whew. I know which one of you were up dancing, too. We have a spectroscope here at the Malloy program. We can see who... All right. Back to some phone calls here. Dave is calling from Little Canada, Minnesota, listening on the internet. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mikey, how goes it?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Really good. I'm glad to hear that. It seems like every time I get put on hold, I have two questions in mind, and one more has to go out the window because you bring up something far more important.
Yeah?
But the first thing I wanted to actually mention was what you thought about Karl Rove once again evading his subpoena, and if you think Barack Obama is going to do anything about it.
Well,
what do you think about that? Do you think anything's actually going to happen to Karl Rove? Do you think these people will actually investigate themselves?
Obama has no power here. It's
the Congress, right?
Yeah, it's the Congress issuing subpoenas, and he's ignoring them. Back in the neighborhood where I grew up in Toledo, there was a presence that was always around, and most of the people who had the presence had last names ending in a vowel. And I will guarantee you, if somebody was told to show up in order to explain why he had or had not done something and didn't show up, there would be broken legs. There would be trips to the hospital. Never killing, just always beating them within an inch of their lives.
I got a friend from Youngstown. I know what you're
talking
about.
Well, you know what I'm talking about then, don't you?
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to mention was I'm actually really, really, I'm really glad that you brought up John Hagee, because the pastor, Brock's pastor, Jeremiah Wright, his name escaped you for a second.
Right, right.
But what's funny is they showed a snippet of what he said. Goddamn America. Now, if you're a true Christian, which I once was, I'm leaning more towards getting away from faith because it doesn't make any sense to me in my older age.
Mm-hmm.
Older age, I'm 24. What am I talking about? But this guy, when you look at the entire speech of what he says,
right,
what God is worthy of worship who won't condemn the sins of humanity?
Well, yeah, he wasn't.
Exactly. Think about this. You say, goddamn Kim Jong-il for oppressing his people. Yeah. Goddamn
right.
Saddam Hussein for hurting his people. Yeah. Goddamn America for blacks.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I thought God liked us more than everybody else. It's like,
Jeremiah Wright didn't use that word the way you and I might in a slang conversation.
There
was a pause. He was saying, God damn America.
Exactly.
And
he's almost like a harsher version of MLK. MLK said something similar, but he expressed what he said in a love language.
Right.
So even in a love language, we still got mad at him for saying it. You know what I mean? America doesn't like criticism. That's the truth.
Well, America doesn't like criticism, especially from black folk.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because, see, they know everything. White folks know everything.
That's right. Nah, that's right.
And then again, I'm glad you mentioned Sean Hannity last week, because that guy really is a brain-dead moron, and anybody who listens to him doesn't get it. But did Jerry Falwell not give this man an honorary degree? The same man who said 9/11 was the fault of the gays, the Jews, the ACLU, and the liberals? Of course, he never apologized. When Christopher Hitchens, I know you know Christopher Hitchens, when he went on that rampage about Falwell after he died, Hannity tells him, he profoundly and repeatedly apologized, which he didn't, by the way. What he said was, I was taken out of context. Which is funny, because when you put what he said in context, it's actually worse.
It's even worse.
It's even worse. Listen, how do you say gays, Jews, liberals, and the ACLU are the problem? Okay, how do you take that out of context, first of all?
Right.
And if it's out of context, how do you put it back into context?
That's right.
You know, and the reason why these guys get away with it is because they're white. That's why they get away with it. Rod Parsley, Frank Robeson, I think Robeson, I can't remember his first, James Robeson,
yeah.
His name,
yeah.
John Hagee, Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson said Hugo Chavez needs to be assassinated.
Sure.
Could you imagine if Jeremiah Wright said that? All of a sudden, the right wing would actually care, like act like they gave a damn about Hugo Chavez. How dare he say that about Hugo Chavez? It's just the Christian hypocrisy. You know, I try to have, I can't stand it anymore. I used to go to a Baptist church for many years. My pastor was a wonderful guy, but it just makes less and less sense to me, man.
Well, just, Dave, keep an open mind, because what's happening, I think the logic and a rational mind is starting to take over. When I was a kid, I used to go with my grandmother to Baptist church also.
Sure.
When I was a teenager, it became Methodist. And the only difference between the Methodists and the Baptists is the Baptists would tell you every Sunday your ass is going to burn in hell, whereas the Methodists will wait a while. You know, they just tell you maybe six times a year. But so pay attention to that little voice in your head that's saying, yo, wait a minute, this stuff probably isn't true. You know?
I tried having a talk with my mom about my loss.
No.
I just kept my mouth shut. I'm not a good son.
You can't do it.
I try. You know, the worst thing about it is we're immigrants. I mean, I was born here. My family are immigrants from Eritrea. You know where Eritrea is?
Yes, I certainly do. Yes.
Okay. Well, my mother is a very religious person. I mean, super duper religious.
Sure.
And she, you know, her English, even though she's been here for 24, 25 years now, her English is still kind of sketchy. And she's trying to explain to me. She said, oh, Dave, I wish I had a better vocabulary to explain this. I'm like, Mom, I've heard Harvard PhDs, and it still didn't make any sense.
Right.
I mean, the talking snake living in a fish for 3 days, the big boat with two of every animal, even though there's 10 billion species of animals. I mean, come on.
Well, now.
And every country has a guy that has the same backstory. Came from a virgin, right. Died, 3 days later came back. Everyone's got the same backstory.
Yeah, the flood. Oh, they all have floods. They all have some version of, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, now, does the Bible say a fish or a whale? Because, I guess it does say a fish. They couldn't even get that right.
A mammal. They didn't even know what mammals were back in the day. And then they want to teach creationism in school, a time where kids are failing in science in America behind every other country in the world.
Yeah.
And they want to teach creationism.
Yeah, well, it's I think cooler heads are going to prevail. I really do.
I pray to somebody. I pray to Joe Pesci, like George Carlin says.
There you go.
Pray to Joe Pesci.
Yeah, anything.
Oh, man, Carlin was always the best at putting religion in perspective. I mean,
he was really good. He was. All right, Dave, I got to go. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take care. We'll hear from you again. Little Canada, Minnesota. Yeah, we talked about that. He called in last week, didn't he? Not too far from Minneapolis, St. Paul. Dave, you got to get busy working on your routine so you can go into stand-up comedy. You're a funny dude. I mean, that's a compliment. Where are we? David is calling from San Francisco, listening on Sirius. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dave's not here.
Oh, who says?
Hey, Mike. Yeah, David Gray. Yes, yeah, in San Francisco. I was interested in the issue of Bobby Jindal and how he's cheating the state of Louisiana.
Yeah.
Are you you still getting coverage throughout the South, especially along the Tennessee River?
Only on Sirius XM or the internet. There's not a radio station in the old Confederacy that carries our program.
Well, I just remember old IE days.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, you still got some fans down there. You know that big TVA spill, the poison in the Tennessee River,
and the
Chattanooga and Huntsville and Memphis and Nashville and Paducah, Kentucky and New Orleans. So Bobby Jindal is offered billions and billions of dollars to protect the state of Louisiana. And hypothetically, I mean, just like 9/11, there was such a clear, honest-to-God, heartfelt support for the poor people of Louisiana right after Katrina that if they wanted anything, they could have it. And they're learning now that $170 billion never got there. $170 billion never got there. So when Bobby Jindal tells them that not only never got there, but he's going to make sure that nothing else ever comes there, you know, they've got to look at themselves as either being the most utter fools or they are in an easy choice, let's say, needs to be made. You know, with all of the activity there would be needed to rebuild a missing city, you know, America is missing a city, New Orleans.
Right.
And the idea that it hasn't got a flurry of activity down there, and that unemployment should be, like, less than zero. You know, the idea that you would have all these eager hands flooding down to New Orleans to rebuild it, you know, and clean up after the aftermath of such a horror as Katrina.
And
$170 billion disappears.
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem, Dave, thanks, I got a break here. I think part of the problem is that, not the entire problem, you know, Bobby Jindal, or I'm sorry, his name is not Bobby, it's Paiyush. Paiyush Jindal is a politician, and he is obviously an ambitious man. Remember what happened to Caesar. Caesar was an ambitious man, too. Just go online real quick and read the funeral oration for Caesar about what happens to ambitious men. Well, I'm Mike Malloy, and thanks to the crew tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered, answered your phone calls, Ben Birch, our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, our economic correspondent, and our two ethical advisors, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, Miasma conflagration stew is all put together by our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. Where are we? Glenn. Glenn is calling from New Orleans, listening on XM. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. It's good to talk to you. I'm a resident of the great state of Louisiana and enjoyed your comments about our governor.
Really?
Kind
is
of
he
for our state? Because
well, I feel the same way about the governor here in Georgia. So I think it's something about Republican governors in the South. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I had an occasion to meet him on several occasions actually, and have seen him decidedly turn more and more conservative over the years. A few years ago, when he was running against Kathleen Blanco, he said, I don't want to do anything but be governor. I don't want to be a career politician. After he lost that election, he immediately ran for Congress. And he was a pretty decent congressman, but now he's in a different position.
Yeah.
But I reflect back on a couple of things that you said, and I'm kind of glad that they put him up there, because if he runs against Barack Obama or any on the ticket, good, because Barack will get in again.
It's astonishing to me that the Republican Party has degenerated, if that's the right word. They were always in the sewer, but they've degenerated to the point where they have people like Limbaugh, an exorcist, Bobby Jindal, the hoe from Wasilla, what's her name, the governor of Alaska, and Joe the plumber. These are people who speak for the Republican Party. I say, give us more, bring more out. Keep putting Tom DeLay on Hardball. Keep allowing Paiyush Jindal to continue to spout his insanity, and let America see what Republicans are really like.
Well, I found it interesting that he kicked off his speech by talking about or identifying with Barack Obama and his diverse ethnicity and relating to him, his ethnicity.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time, he kind of disavowed his origin by changing his name legally from Paiyush to Bobby. And, you know, that's not cultural identity. That's kind of denying your identity.
Yeah, it's but I think Jindal realizes that who he is and where he lives and the kind of people he's associating himself with. Let's drop my given name and come up with Bobby, because
sure.
I think a lot of people in his constituency would think nothing about tying him behind a pickup truck and dragging him through the streets.
There probably are some like that. And yet he was the best choice of the governors that were the candidates who were running for governor when he successfully won.
Which
and that's kind of sad too.
Yeah, which speaks volumes about the Louisiana politics as it is now. Of course, we like I said, we I'm not pointing fingers, because I live in Georgia, pal. You know, we have the same thing here, only probably worse. Our governor is all white. He's large and obese, like so many of these people are. The Georgia House is practically all Republican. The Georgia Senate is practically all Republican, and they're driving the state right into the toilet. It's astonishing to see, but you know, it's not surprising. Glenn, I got
to
go. Thanks. I appreciate appreciate
you
checking in. Yeah, here in Georgia, to stanch the flow of red ink, they're talking about Sunday liquor sales, which we don't have here. They're talking about casino gambling in this freak show in downtown Atlanta called Underground Atlanta, which I don't know. I guess it's supposed to be like an adult Disneyland or something. I've never been able to figure out what Underground Atlanta really is. So casino gambling, booze, and now the great state of California, wasn't it introduced in their legislature to legalize marijuana and tax it, which makes perfect sense. I mean, it's crazy. The biggest cash crop in America, the biggest cash crop in America is homegrown reefer. And without a doubt, well, this might be argued. No, it's not arguable. The biggest cash crop in California is marijuana. But because of these crazed laws that we have regarding a plant, don't touch the plant, don't smoke the plant. Now, of course, if the plant happens to be tobacco, which kills 500,000 Americans every year, oh, no big deal, man. Oh, God, we can't have a dollar tax on tobacco, on cigarettes, on a pack of cigarettes. Oh, Lord, the heavens will open. And you see, it's just madness. It's madness. And to the guy in California, I think it was a man in the General Assembly out there, or the state legislature, whatever it's called, you know, good for you. Good for you for finally having such an epiphanous moment that maybe one of the ways to handle this horrendous budget shortfall in California is not to increase taxes yet, just legalize pot and slap a nice, per ounce tax on that. And if you're a pot grower, come on, don't get pissed off at me. You know how great it would be to no longer have to worry about whether or not somebody was going to machine gun you or whether or not the feds were going to drop in helicopters and parachutes. So, yeah, legalize it. Gatewood Galbraith here in Kentucky, just north of here, put forth this idea 35 years ago. The Kentucky Feasibility Marijuana Study would have wiped out poverty in Kentucky. Probably got rid of a whole bunch of Christian fundamentalists, too, because let them smoke a few joints of real, real, really good bud, and all of a sudden, wow, man, never mind. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought Radio Network.